Chapter 6, Wednesday, April 6th, 0011 New Era, 0403 Hours. South Wabash offered no resistance. Scott led the five-man team right on Harrison, as Grammer had instructed, and they worked their way toward Clark Street. One turn separated them from the Bachma carrier. They stopped next to a brick-red facility at the corner of Harrison and Clark. Scott pulled a spot mirror from his belt and slipped it past the corner.
Faust, do you know the way to the engine room?
Yes, sir.
Scott tilted his head to angle Clark Street into the reflection. The carrier took up the entire Clark-Polk intersection. Its mammoth bay doors were wide open, and a metal ramp led into it. The Bachma defenders came into view.
All right, I count at least a dozen Bachma, possibly more. Here's what we're going to do.
He turned and spoke to Donner.
I want you to go back and get that van we used earlier. Drive it here to the corner and stop. Go now. Run.
Donner left and Scott addressed Voss next.
Bring up the carrier schematics.
Voss handed Scott a small device with an embedded monitor. The bay was square and deep. It ended against a wall with a single central corridor. It was almost laughably simple.
Does this hall lead to the engine room?
Yes, sir. That's where we're going to go. It's the big main corridor. It leads to everything.
How wide is it?
About 2 meters.
2 meters. That was wide enough.
We get in the van, and Donner drives us up the ramp. Even if they shoot the van, we should be okay. It's a lot safer than storming it by foot.
Are you telling me he's driving us to the corridor? Into the carrier? To the corridor?
Right. We don't have to drive down the corridor. All he has to do is get us to it.
Right, I see a problem. How are we going to get from the van to the corridor without getting reefed?
Because Donner's going to drive the van backward.
And we stay in the back of the van. He'll drive it right to the corridor, against it even. And all we do is open the back door, and there we are.
Exactly. It'll happen so fast, they won't have time to think.
Grammer laughed and shook his head.
That's genius.
Get on the comm and explain the plan to Donner. Make sure he understands exactly what he has to do.
Grammer nodded and knelt to relay the plan. The offensive on South Michigan continued as the arrival of Eden reinforcements shifted momentum in their favor. The Bachma that remained, now outnumbered, were in full retreat. David and Henry, out of ammunition, had since returned to the landing zone. Wounded were spread across the ground as the available medical crews hustled between those in critical condition and those more stable. David stepped through them to reach Vulture 7, where the rest of Charlie's squad, also ammo depleted, awaited.
How's the rescue team?
Donald, unharnessed from the minigun, glanced to him.
They assault the carrier.
What?
Scott found out about the other team. They were supposed to take out one of the Bachma carriers. Scott got permission to continue the mission.
Henry stooped to a kneel.
Wait, Scott's assaulting a carrier? What happened to Henry?
He's out. I guess he got taken down. I don't know if he's dead or what.
How many people does he have with him?
Count who ain't here. That's how many.
Can they survive that?
Donald didn't reply. He only feigned a smile and lowered his gaze to the street. As soon as Donner pulled up, Scott swung the back doors of the van open.
Everybody, check your ammo count and make sure you're fully loaded.
He slammed the door as soon as everyone was in, and he turned to Donner.
Do you get the plan?
Yes, sir. Understood.
Can you do it?
Yes, sir, I can.
Scott returned his attention to the others. It was time.
All right, everyone, let's do it right.
His gaze swiveled back to Donner.
Go!
Donner slammed down the accelerator and the van rocketed backward into Clark Street. The operatives grabbed the van's support rails. Donner whipped the wheel around and the van swerved around the corner. His gaze narrowed in the rear view.
Nessa to Magnus.
The slender Bachma leaned against the wall of the carrier's deployment bay. The smaller Bachma next to him grunted.
Gnes, you tekum no lastun.
The conversation drew to an abrupt close. The two Bachma and their dozen counterparts turned to face the street. In the center of the road, a worn-out van rocketed at them in reverse. The deployment bay fell silent. The slender warrior started, leapt up, and trained his plasma rifle.
Uman!
The Bachma surrounding him scurried for their weapons. Plasma soared through the van. The vehicle wavered back and forth as several bolts ripped through its metal frame, though the operatives were untouched. Donner white-knuckled the wheel as the metal ramp loomed nearer.
Hold on!
Impact. The van slammed into the ramp, and the back end buckled off the ground and crashed against the metal floor in an explosion of sparks. Bachma defenders dove out of the way. Donner regained his focus and checked the rear view. The corridor was in sight. He whipped his head around and focused through the back window as plasma bolts rocked the van. They were on target. It was time to break. Donner readied his foot.
Open the doors!
Scott and Beacon swung them open, and Donner slammed to the brakes. A screech pierced the deployment. The crash came like a train wreck. The van crunched against the metal frame of the corridor, and the operatives were jolted through the air. They slammed against the center of the corridor itself. It took a moment for them to regain their senses before they leapt to their feet and spun around. The van was in place. They were inside. Donner slammed the parking brake and locked the doors. As plasma bolts crashed through the front window, he leapt over the console and scrambled to join the others. The corridor was lit by a row of light down the center of the ceiling. Doors lined the corridor to its end, which came in the form of a two-way split. Resistance hit them immediately. The door nearest them slid open, and a single Bachma rushed into the hall. Grammer raised his assault rifle and pulled the trigger. Scott waved his arm forward.
Faust, take the lead! We've got to move!
Faust took the point position. As they ran, doors opened behind them. Grammer skidded around and dropped to a knee.
Keep going! I'll cover right behind you!
His finger pressed against the trigger as he held position. Scott turned to Voss as they reached the two-way split.
Which way?
Left, then right, then there's a door.
What's after that?
Nothing, that's it.
Voss darted around the left corner as they reached the split.
Someone should stay here, and one person come with me.
Scott slapped Beacon's chest.
Go with him.
Beacon disappeared with Voss. Scott and Donner fortified the split as Grammer rejoined them.
What's the news?
I should be dead.
Grammer said as he caught his breath and reloaded.
Did you get hit?
No, but I don't know how. There's a ton of them. When they storm this hall, there's no way we're getting out.
Scott turned to Donner.
Go with Vows. Grammer and I have this covered. We'll be there soon.
Beacon and Vows were outside the engine room when Donner caught up with him. Gunfire erupted from the main corridor. Beacon wheeled around.
Where's Remy?
Donner pointed to the turn.
They're back at the split.
How many Bachma are there?
A lot more than us.
The door to the engine room whooshed into the ceiling. Beacon and Donner jumped and aimed their assault rifles, but the engine room was empty. Beacon glared at Vows.
The hell was that? You mind telling us before you open important doors?
Sorry,
Vows said, shuffling through the doorway. The engine room was circular with a metal platform at its center. Various controls flickered on it where Vows inputted his instruments.
Sir,
he said through the comm.
We're in the engine room and it's secure. It's probably safer for you here. I'm working on the drive now.
Scott's voice emerged.
We're on our way.
Scott ducked as plasma bolts soared over his head. Grammer was on his heels.
Come on!
Scott said as they rounded the corner to the engine room.
Vows, can you seal the engine room door?
Vows' voice was interrupted by static through the comm.
Yes, I can seal it and lock it from the inside. I've almost got the drive deactivated.
We're coming to get you. Get ready to seal the door.
Beacon waved the two men on.
Hurry up!
Drive disabled!
Vows said, thrusting his hands into the air. Scott skidded into the engine room.
Door!
Grammer entered a moment later. Behind them, a team of Bachma rounded the corner. Plasma bolts whizzed into the engine room as Vows dashed to the door. Scott, Beacon, Grammer, and Donner returned fire.
Door, door, door!
Yelled Beacon. Vows' breathing intensified. His fingers tore at the controls. It wasn't until the Bachma were within meters of the entrance that the door slammed down.
Sealed and locked!
How long until they figure out how to open it again? Okay, I'll take that as an urgent request for backup.
As the other operatives remained in defensive positions, Scott knelt and adjusted his comm. Leyland barked commands as the throng of Eden operatives charged the remnants of the Bachma attack force. The Bachma carrier nearest them was airborne, and Leyland was ready to finish off whatever forces remained on the ground. In the midst of the final charge, a static-filled voice cut through the frantic comm chatter.
Deactivate the drive!
Leyland dropped to a knee and placed his hand over his earpiece.
Please repeat, over!
This is Remington. We have deactivated the drive.
Private, am I correct in understanding that you have deactivated the carrier?
Yes, sir. Wings are clipped.
How in the hell did... What's your situation?
We need immediate assistance, sir. We're trapped inside the engine room.
How many wounded?
None.
All right. I'll dispatch a unit to get you out of there right now. Sit tight for a while longer.
Yes, sir.
Hey, Remington.
Yes, sir.
Nice work.
Thank you, sir.
The comm channel closed. Lyman snatched a nearby officer.
Hey, you, whoever you are.
Sir.
You still got a unit?
Yes, sir. We're still...
Shut up. We have a strike team inside the Southern Carrier. They're pinned inside the engine room. Take your unit. Find a second unit to go get them out. Fast. Got that?
Yes, sir.
Good. Now go.
David paced in front of Vulture 7. Henry, Michael, and Donald stood alongside him, all silent as they waited for an update.
They did it!
They all jumped at the sound of the jubilant voice. It was Tacker.
They did it!
Tacker said as he trotted toward them.
They grounded the transport.
Are they okay?
They're all fine. We've got two units en route to assist them now.
Hell yes!
With five men, they disabled a transport. That's unheard of!
Tacker eyed the barricade.
I've got other messages to deliver. Go find the others. Let them know everyone's okay.
Yes, sir!
Donald shook his head and smiled.
They's all right. I knew they's all right.
Scott, Grammer, Voss, Beacon, and Donner knelt along the walls. Their assault rifles were propped against their shoulders, trained on the door. On the other side, the Bachma shouted at one another in their alien tongue. 5 minutes passed before anything changed. Footsteps were heard, and the Bachma broke into a mad holler. Gunshots, both plasma and projectile, erupted. The battle was short-lived as a familiar word spilled from the Bachma defenders. Grashna, Grashna, the Bachma word for self-surrender. Footsteps grew quiet as weapons clunked together and human voices emerged. Several minutes passed before someone knocked on the door.
Everybody okay in there?
Scott signaled, and Voss opened the door. There were no Bachma on the other side, only the relieved expressions of Eden soldiers. Scott let out a breath of relief. The soldier who knocked smiled.
You're actually in here. Wow. There's two jeeps out front waiting to take you guys back to the landing zone. How'd you guys do this?
Scott laughed. He wasn't sure how else to respond. More operatives filed into the engine room, and the five men stepped out. As far as they could see, no Bachma remained in the carrier. Several sweeper teams from Eden were in the hallways, as were various other operatives, but no one else. As soon as they stepped outside, the reason became clear. Alongside Clark Street stood several rows of Bachma warriors, their purple, wrinkled hands clasped together as armed Eden soldiers presided over them. Scott knew the aliens' destination, confinement. Each base had one, and Richmond was no exception. There they would be prodded and probably tortured for whatever information they could provide. At the moment, Scott didn't much care. As promised, a pair of jeeps awaited the five men. The ride back to the safe zone revealed the battle's aftermath. Bloodied soldiers walked the streets, and Bachma survivors were herded together. The skirmish was over. When they arrived back at the barricade, Lylan and two other colonels were there to meet them. The jeeps stopped, and all five operatives leapt from them and snapped off salutes. Lylan was the first to speak, through the wide smile plastered across his face.
Fellas, this is Colonel Young of Hawk Platoon and Colonel Leday of Griffin.
The two colonels shot off salutes. Young immediately surveyed the five.
Remington?
Here, sir.
Young curved his mouth into a smile and extended his hand. Scott shook it.
Excellent job, soldier,
Young said.
Thank you, sir.
Young took a step back, turned to Lylan, and patted him on the shoulder.
Keep proving him wrong.
That's the idea.
Young and Leday nodded to the five again and turned from the group. Lylan watched them leave before he refocused on his operatives. His smile surfaced once more.
You turned some heads tonight.
The operatives regarded him in silence.
Remington, McCray, and Donner, catch a ride back with Hawk. The rest of Falcon's already left for base.
The three men nodded, exchanged handshakes with Grammer and Voss, and hurried behind Colonel Young. Grammer waited for them to disappear before he cleared his throat.
Permission to speak freely, sir?
Lylan glanced to him.
Go ahead.
You have the best commander in all of Richmond, sir.
What?
Commander Remington, sir.
Wait, you mean him?
He turned around to indicate the barricade behind which Scott had just disappeared.
Yes, sir. He is a Falcon, right, sir?
Commander Remington?
Grammer was silent. Lylan shifted to face Grammer fully.
Wait a minute. You thought he was a commander?
Still, Grammer said nothing. Lylan broke into laughter.
Sir, I don't understand.
I just realized that. That's why I'm laughing. Congratulations, fellas. You just got duped by a rookie. Remington is an alpha.
Leland stepped away as Grammer and Vowse dropped their jaws. Once more, he found himself laughing. Remington pretended to be a commander, and he snuck into command. The crazy part was, the men under him had bought it. It had worked. It was exactly what good behavior wasn't. It was reckless, dishonest, and completely out of line for an Eden operative. Leland loved every part of it. When Scott, Beacon, and Donner stepped into the Richmond hangar, the rest of Falcon Platoon awaited. David slammed into Scott as soon as Scott emerged from the transport. Backslaps pounded against the young soldier.
That's how you do it!
Scott laughed as he fought to maintain balance.
I guess it is.
Do you have any idea what you guys just did?
Just what the other team couldn't. It's no big deal.
It hasn't dawned on you yet, has it?
Scott gave him a quizzical stare. Beacon's eyes searched for someone else, though she found him first. It was Natasha. She approached him from the side and captured him in a full-bodied embrace. Beacon's hands wrapped around her as he stumbled.
Grand to see you too.
Beacon, you're a hero.
I am in me wick.
Everyone is talking about this. That's all the comm chatter was about during the ride home. None of the commanding officers can believe you pulled this off.
Really?
Really.
Tacker cut through the crowd toward Scott.
Remington!
Scott spun away from David to face the voice. He immediately snapped to attention.
Sir.
Tacker laughed and shook his hand.
Remington, that was unbelievable. How in God's name you pulled that off is beyond me.
Thank you, sir.
Oh, my goodness. Hey, listen, I've got to get the colonel up to par with your side of the fight, but I had to tell you that. Pull some more stuff like that and you'll have my job.
Thank you, sir.
Salutes were exchanged and Tacker filed away. Beacon was there a moment later.
Can ye bloody believe this?
I guess we did something right.
We're going to be on the telly national news.
You're joking.
I'm not. Remy, do you realize that the battle tonight was the third largest land battle fought on American soil since the alien war began?
Well, how do you know?
Natasha, she told me a lot just now. Mostly what they heard from the COs on the way back to base. The battle is going to be aired all over the world. Now, I know that's nothing unusual. Most fights are. But they might mention us.
Us as in us?
They're going to talk about how a five-man team took out an entire Bachma carrier without taking the hit.
Wow.
Yeah, wow.
The two men stared at each other for a moment before they turned their attention to the hangar. Activity bustled in every direction as the full capacity of Vultures returned to base. The next hour was spent in recollection as Scott, Beacon, and Donner retold the story of the carrier to officer after officer. As time passed, excitement gave way to exhaustion, and exhaustion reminded them that before Chicago, they had been asleep in their beds. They took advantage of their first opportunity to slip away and return to the living quarters, where they showered and retired to their rooms. It didn't take any Falcon Platoon operatives long to fall asleep. The clock neared 7 in the morning when the last operative turned in, and rest became a well-deserved ally. Their comms never beeped. Chapter 7, Wednesday, April 6th, 0011, New Era, 1302 hours. It was 1300 hours when Leland knocked on General Hutchins' door. The weather outside was a meteorological nightmare. The whole of the Virginias were in the midst of a liquid bombardment. Humid smells festered in the base. It was more than apparent in Hutchins' office, despite the portable fan that whirred in the corner.
Sir?
Leland said as he stepped inside. Hutchins was poring over a stack of memos.
Hi, Brent. Have a seat. You sleep all right?
Didn't sleep. Would have been pointless to try.
Hutchins' eyes left the papers as he leaned back in his chair.
I read over the reports from last night, yours several times. Very interesting stuff. There are a few things that caught my eye, though. Mostly your requests. You want to make Remington a Delta?
I'd like it to be considered, sir.
You realize that's a 3-rank promotion? That's borderline absurd.
Sir, with all due respect, the line of absurdity was crossed when I was given a platoon full of rookies.
Is that why this recommends McCray and Jurgen for Gamma and Timmons, Bell, Rhodes, and Donner for Beta?
I believe that's reasonable.
Whew. Brent, you've been a colonel since Eden began. You know these requests are ridiculous.
I don't do anything without a reason. You know that. I'd never promote someone unless I knew they could handle it. Do you have any idea what Remington did? Any idea what he accomplished? Do you know how many Bachma were on that ship, sir?
No, I just...
44. 18 were killed, 26 were captured. Do you understand the odds five men have against 44 Bachma?
I'll admit that is fairly impressive.
Well, that's not all to take into consideration, sir. You're right, it's impressive. It's impressive for anyone to take a 44-man carrier. These men weren't anyone. Three of them were rookies. Not only rookies, but rookies on their first mission. Remington was on his first mission. The last combat he saw was in a Philadelphia simulator. Consider that for a moment, General. A rookie led a team that shut down a Bachma carrier with a crew of 44. And to make it that much better, they did it without a single casualty. This was originally assigned to a crew of 20 from Cougar Platoon. When I first heard that, I was astounded. I knew that there were three possibilities. The Bachma could have been completely incompetent. They've never been that before. Or it could have been that this was a fluke of astronomical proportions. They happen. Flukes are inevitable. The third possibility, though, is that Remington outled the original task force completely. I thought about it when I got back. Remington's decision was voluntary. Nobody told him to do it. I listened over his audio transmissions, and he was adamant about it. Five times he asked permission to proceed, to both me and Major Tacker. We weren't reassuring when we spoke to him. Remington knew what he was asking. He knew the odds, and he repeatedly asked for it. He knew he could do it.
Or he thought he knew.
Which would make it a fluke.
He pulled a small disc from his jersey and tossed it on the desk.
What's this?
That's his audio log. I listened to it from start to finish. He doesn't act like a rookie. Not once did his voice waver. When Henrik fell, he didn't wait for someone to tell him to take over. He took over immediately. He wanted it. His command style is better than some captains I've worked with. He's decisive, and his decisions work. If I were listening to this for the first time without knowing who it was, I'd swear this was a commanding officer.
According to your report, some operatives did.
Nobody questioned his authority. When a Delta confuses an Alpha with a bona fide CO, you know something's going on. He had charisma. They wanted to follow him. That's not something you can teach.
Ha! I did enjoy the part about the van. That's as original an idea as I've ever heard. All right, Brent. I'll admit, you've got some valid arguments for this kid.
There's one more request I have for him. I'd like to nominate him for a Golden Lion.
The room quieted.
You realize that the Lion medals are meant for commanding officers?
He was the commanding officer, sir. The fact that he was an Alpha is irrelevant. The Golden Lion calls for courage, wisdom, and fortitude in a position of leadership against overwhelming odds. Everything it asks for, he gave. His actions define what the Golden Lion is about, maybe better than anyone who's ever earned it.
You realize that no rookie has ever received a Golden Lion? Or any Lion medal? Hell, Fairbird didn't get one until he was an Epsilon. His first was a Bronze.
I'm aware of that, sir.
That would make Remington the first man in Eden history to earn a Golden Lion on his first mission. Nobody else has even come close.
Nobody else could have led that operation.
I'm not gonna let you bump him to Delta Trooper, not this fast. I'll let you bump him to Gamma, but that's it for now. I want to make sure this kid is what you say he is before he starts scaling the chain of command. I realize, though, that if you're right, holding him back will only hurt us. Good leaders are hard to come by.
I want to lead him personally in our next assignment, to see how he behaves firsthand. I want to see if he can follow orders as well as he gives them.
That sounds acceptable.
And the others?
Why Jurgen? He wasn't on the rescue team.
The other operatives already look up to him. He served with the NYPD for 14 years. I think he could serve well as a role model.
I'll let you move McCray, Timmons, Donner, and Rhodes to Beta. As for Jurgen, not yet. I realize his experience is valuable, but I still want to wait a bit longer. That's my final decision.
And the Golden Lion?
Oof. I'll think about it. I want to make sure I'm not putting someone in the history books without a good reason. I'll give this disc a listen and talk it over with Eden Command. I would say that he has a fairly good chance. I'll make his case as you did.
Understood, sir.
Is that all you have for me?
Yes, sir.
All right, then. You're free to go. Thank you for the report.
Lylan rose, thanked the general, and stepped out of the room. The phone rang at 1330. It took several seconds for the repetitive reverberation to register in Scott's mind, at which point his eyes shot open in a dazed frenzy. He bolted upright as David started in the bunk above. Scott's mind panicked. Jerseys! 3 minutes! Find Tacker! Then it clicked. The phone. It was only the phone.
What the hell?
It's a phone. It's only the phone.
David flopped back down as Scott chuckled. His heart settled and he fumbled for the receiver.
Hello?
Scott? Thank God.
Nicole. He grunted in realization and sat upright. He glanced at the clock. It was past 1:30.
Hey, baby, what's going on?
1:30. Unbelievable. He must have been out like a corpse. She fluttered a breath.
What's going on? I got back from class, turned on the television, and saw that Richmond got called into Chicago. They said the city was a war zone. Then I checked and saw that you never called.
He winced. Of course.
No. No. Baby, I'm fine.
Were you sleeping?
Yeah. I'm sorry. I should have called last night. I was caught up in everything.
Caught up in everything?
Yeah. The fight.
God, how was he going to explain this? He heard her inhale sharply.
No, I'm fine. Everything was fine.
That Nicole?
David croaked from the top bunk. Scott covered the receiver.
Yeah, man, hold on.
Have fun with this one.
Scott?
I'm here. Sorry.
Were you there last night?
Yes, I was there. Hey, don't worry, though. I'm fine. I didn't get hurt. I didn't get shot or anything.
I just led a random strike team into a carrier. She released another audible breath.
Thank God.
Scott leaned back against the wall of the bed.
So you were there. How bad was it?
Here it came.
It was pretty bad. I mean, not like really bad, but we got called in as backup. The first wave from Eden got hammered.
Were there a lot of Bachma?
Yeah, there was a pretty fair amount.
That was an understatement. There were more Bachma than clips to drop them, but that wasn't what she needed to hear. What was inevitable, however, was much more complicated.
Baby, there's something I have to tell you.
Total quiet. In the second that followed, Scott's mind played over the typical words that followed that statement. I'm calling from prison. I gambled all our money. I'm having an affair.
Don't worry, I'm not having an affair or anything.
What?
Huh?
An affair?
No, baby, I'm not having an affair.
Oh, Scott, why did you say that?
I just said it. I just said it. I'm sorry. I was just thinking of, you know, when people say they have something to tell someone and like...
David lost it in the upper bunk.
Baby, I just woke up. My mind's not even here yet. There's no affair. That's not what I have to tell you. Did you hear anything about a carrier?
What?
On the news. Did they say anything about a Bachma carrier getting captured?
Yes. I think I remember that.
It was time. There were no more bushes to beat around. Drop back.
I was part of the team that captured it.
She stifled a gasp.
You were inside an alien spaceship? Scott, how many of you were there?
Pass.
Five?
Five? Scott, what were you doing?
Touchdown.
I led it.
There were only two ways she could respond. The first was with total awe. He was her hero, a champion of the world, a knight. He bravely took up his sword and charged into the dragon's lair to come out the victor on the other side.
Oh, my Scott!
That was the second way.
Baby, baby, calm down.
Scott, you expect me to calm down when I find out you're assaulting alien spaceships? My God, Scott!
Baby.
I can't believe that it was your first mission. What were they thinking? Who in their right mind orders a soldier to lead an assault on his first mission? Are they really that crazy?
Well, baby.
Who ordered you to do it, Scott? I want to know who this lunatic is.
There was no way this would be good. The hammer had already fallen. The nail was in the coffin.
I volunteered.
What?
Baby, please.
What?
Baby.
Have you lost your mind? Have you... God, my God, I can't believe I'm hearing this.
Nikki, listen, just give me a second to...
Scott, do you have any idea how I feel right now? Do you know how many nights I'm wide awake in bed praying for you to be safe? And now you're telling me, my God, I can't believe this.
Baby, I was fine.
Am I supposed to be okay with this? Are you joking?
Baby, no. I mean...
First day you told me you were joining Eden, every day since, I've been holding in the back of my mind, what if you die? What if I wake up and find out that you're dead? And now you're volunteering to die? Why? Why are you doing this?
Nikki, you know why I'm doing this.
No, please don't tell me you thought it was God's will, because that's the same thing you said about us. Nothing about this has worked in any way that is good for us. You leave school out of nowhere when everything is going for you. You tell me you'll be stationed in Detroit, now you're in Virginia, and now you expect me to hear that you're just throwing your life around, and I'm supposed to be okay with that?
Nikki.
Scott, it can't be both ways. It says that in scripture, we both know it. God's will does not contradict itself. How can he want us together but ask you to do everything that pulls us apart?
Nikki, I can't answer that. I can't explain why I feel the way I do. I just feel like I need to be here.
What about us? I don't think I can live like this.
Nikki, I love you. I want to marry you. You know I felt since the beginning that God had something special for us. I still feel that, don't you?
Yes. I've loved you for so long. I don't remember how it feels not to love you. I don't want to remember.
But don't you feel like God has something special for us?
Yes. I've always felt like that, and I still do. I just don't feel what you're doing. I don't feel it, not at all. I feel like you're running off on your own somewhere, and I don't understand why.
Listen, it's the same way I feel like there's something special for us. I feel like there's something special for me here. I don't understand it either. I wish I could just let you feel this like I do.
Scott, please. Please, I'm begging you, don't leave me alone. I love you so much. I don't want you to die.
I love you too. I won't die.
All I want is you. You're it. I don't want to wake up alone anymore. I don't want to wonder if you're okay.
Nikki, we're going to be together. This is a rough spot right now, but I am not putting this ahead of us. This will come to an end.
Soon?
I don't know. God, I hope so.
It has to be soon.
I can't promise that.
David cleared his throat from above.
Scott, I really do hate to say this right now, but it's past 1:30, and the cafeteria stopped serving at 2.
Just hang on, baby.
Scott covered the receiver with his hand.
And you don't want to unload how you feel right now. You just woke up. You're emotional. She's emotional. Trust me, Scott. Hang up right now and give both yourself and her time to think.
It's fine. Everything's...
Scott, believe me. I was where you are a long time ago. It will amaze you how fast a conversation like this can shift in an ugly way. A lot of bad things are said when emotions run high. Let it go for now. Give yourselves time. She'll be okay for a few more hours.
David had been with the NYPD for 14 years. He and Sharon must have gone through the same thing, probably many times. Maybe he was right. With two kids, if anyone knew how to handle the situation, he did. Scott uncapped the receiver.
Nikki?
Scott, is everything all right?
Yeah. I actually have to be somewhere pretty soon. I forgot about it.
It was true. He forgot about eating.
Will you be home tonight?
I didn't have anything planned. Are you going to call?
Yeah, I can't tell you what time, but it won't be too late. But we're going to talk about this, okay?
Okay.
Nikki.
Just hang up, Scott.
I love you, girl.
I love you, Scott.
I'll call you tonight.
Okay.
I love you.
I love you.
Bye.
You did good. Believe me, in a few hours, you'll understand why you did that. It'll go fine tonight.
I hope so.
David smiled and dropped to his feet on the floor.
It will. I know. Not because I'm smart or wise or any of those things. I've just been where you are before. Women who marry us are the toughest women on the planet. We put them through hell every time we leave home.
Yeah.
Few women can rival a soldier's wife. They're a lot stronger than we are. She'll be fine tonight. She'll cry a few times between now and then. She'll mull it over in her head, and she'll make the decision to love you. The decision is just as important as the emotion. That's real love.
Scott went to the closet and pulled out his jersey.
What a way to start the day.
Don't think about it.
Nah, I shouldn't have hung up.
Scott, you did right. She will appreciate the time to calm down and clear her mind.
Do you think Sharon's gonna call?
Nope. She knows I'll call as soon as I can. And I will, after we eat.
Scott pushed his arms through his sleeves and pulled up the zipper.
You ready to go?
You're in the lead.
Scott grabbed his wallet, and they filed out of the room. The rest of the afternoon passed in routine. Lunch was conversational, as could be expected on the day after a massive operation. As the two men finished their meals and returned to room 419, they were greeted with information, courtesy of a note under their door, concerning a unit-wide meeting. It was scheduled for 1900 hours, and its location was once again the Richmond Hangar. With time to spare until that point, they sought the company of Beacon and Jaden. For the rest of the open evening, the four neighbors engaged in spirited storytelling, mostly from the aftermath of Chicago. David excused himself from the conversation to call Sharon, a call that lasted well over an hour. A solemn yet reassured David returned to them. Jaden spoke of a call he placed earlier to his parents and brother, all of whom met the news with skepticism and then pride. The Texan was contented in spirits. Beacon had no one to call, though he listened to the others with quiet satisfaction. For the first time that day, Scott found himself in the midst of smiles and laughter. For the moment, the tension-filled conversation with Nicole disappeared from his head. When 1900 finally arrived, the four men abandoned their room and made their way to the hangar. The chairs were situated exactly as they had been on the first day that Leland spoke, though the conversations around them were now much lighter in tone. Leland and Tacker were there when they arrived, and as soon as everyone's watches struck 1900, the colonel cleared his throat. The operatives poised themselves at attention, and Leland smiled.
At ease. Don't worry, I'm not here to scare you today. That day is come and gone, and this day is much better.
Scott smiled as he observed the colonel. So Leland did have a heart. Perhaps today he would find favor with the rest of Charlie's squad. As the unit listened, Leland nodded his head toward several empty chairs in the room. For a moment, his pleasant countenance fell.
You may have noticed that one of the chairs among you is empty. That chair was meant for a private by the name of Fred Wilkins. I don't know how many of you knew Fred, but he was killed in Chicago yesterday. These things happen, but that doesn't make them any easier.
Scott's mind drifted to Wilkins as he focused on one of the chairs. He could see the soldier's face clear in his mind. He could recall the expression on his face when he died. The Bachma hadn't killed Wilkins. Henrik's carelessness had.
He gave his life for something he believed in, and I'd like us all to remember him for that for a few moments.
Leyland fell silent and the hangar hushed. Scott had been standing right next to Wilkins when he died. It could just as easily have been him.
Remorse is not why I asked you here. I asked you here for something much more appropriate. I asked you here for celebration. I'm sure you've all heard now about the incredible rescue made by some of our fellow comrades, as well as capture of a Bachma carrier, a feat that may very well go down in the annals of Eden history as one of our most daring captures ever.
All of Charlie's squad broke into open grins.
It is my pleasure to recognize those individuals with the first promotions of the new Falcon Platoon.
Scott's smile widened. Promotions. On their first mission. It wasn't unheard of, but it was still quite an accomplishment.
Promotions are meant to recognize skill, bravery, and leadership. And these men and women have shown that to the fullest degree. Those operatives are John Donner, Beckin McCray, Sasha Rhodes, and Jaden Timmons. Congratulations to you all. You are now Beta Privates. You will receive your patches tomorrow morning, and your armor's insignia will be adjusted accordingly.
Despite the round of applause that erupted at the sound of their names, the four recognized operatives exchanged perplexed expressions. As they stood to be recognized, they looked at Scott. Scott's expression was contented, and he too clapped his hands in celebration. He knew better, even though a part of him hated the fact that he knew better. There was something for him. There had to be. Was that arrogance? No. A team would not receive promotion and the leader of that team nothing. It wasn't arrogance. It was inevitable. The applause simmered down, and the four new betas lowered. Leyland smiled.
There's somebody missing, isn't there?
The expressions on Beacon, Jaden, Sasha, and John's faces widened. An array of smiles stretched across Charlie Squad, and Scott leaned forward on his knees. He wasn't forgotten. He couldn't have been.
Every now and then, somebody does something so impressive that you can't help but take notice. Last night, one of our fellow comrades did just that, and a lot of people noticed. Taking the burden of leadership on his shoulders, he led one of the most impressive capture operations that Eden has ever seen. Allow me to put what he did into perspective. A strike team of 20 specialists from Cougar Platoon was assigned to the task of capturing a fully functional Bachma carrier. These ranked officers were decimated in the attempt and forced to abandon the mission. When Scott Remington arrived on the scene, only two of them were still in fighting condition.
Several of Scott's teammates slapped him on the back.
Remington rounded them up and of his own accord requested permission to continue the operation. He, with only four other men, assaulted and captured the carrier. They did it without a single casualty. Thanks to his actions, Eden has captured not only a carrier, but over 25 live Bachma.
The colonel smiled as he looked at Scott.
It is my honor to promote Scott Remington to Gamma Private.
Even Scott was surprised. It was more than just special recognition. It was a two-rank jump. That he had not expected. As he rose, applause broke out throughout the platoon. Gamma Private. One rank beneath Delta Trooper and two ranks beneath Epsilon, officer training. He tried and failed to restrain an all-out grin, and after several nods of acknowledgement, turned to sink back into his chair.
Don't sit yet, Private.
Scott halted his descent and stared at the colonel, puzzled.
I put in a special request to General Hutchin earlier today, and he promptly forwarded it to Eden Command. It took only 1 hour for command to get back to us.
From Leyland's right, Tacker smiled broadly and handed the colonel a small wooden box.
Eden has a series of awards specifically designed for leaders who have gone above and beyond the call of duty. It's not an award that is handed down very often. It's an award that specifically calls for heroism, wisdom, and fortitude against overwhelming odds.
Several hushed gasps crossed the room. Scott shivered. Only one medal stood for that, a Lion Medal, No, there was no way. Not for him. A lion medal was more than just a medal. It was a symbol laced heavily with status. Colonels received lion medals, and even that was a rarity. Lyland drew a breath, eased open a smile, and puffed his chest.
Remington, congratulations on being the youngest operative in Eden history to earn a Golden Lion.
An almost audible silence swept through the hangar. Before anyone could utter a reaction, Lyland resumed.
You are the first operative to ever receive a Lion on his first mission, and the first operative to earn one as an Alpha Private. Congratulations, Remington. You have just made history.
Lyland extended the wooden box. The applause that exploded was deafening. Amid the hoots and whistles, Scott found himself stepping, almost floating, to the front of the room. A Golden Lion. It was the most prestigious and beautiful Medal of Honor Eden could offer. The medallion's surface sparkled gold, and the proud pose of a lion's head sat confident in its center, prepared with dauntless ambition for anything that might challenge it. A Golden Lion. Eden's designation of a hero. As Scott took the medallion in his hands, his pupils dilated. After several seconds of admiration, he snapped to awareness and saluted both Lyland and Tacker. Both men returned to the salute and extended their hands.
Do you realize what you've done?
It's amazing.
If you think that's amazing, wait till you see your armor.
Scott shook their hands, closed the wooden box, and returned to his seat. Wait till you see your armor. What did that mean? It wasn't until Scott sat down that Lyland cleared his throat a final time.
You all did it. This unit had something to prove, and you have proved it beyond even my expectations. I have no doubts now that whenever Richmond needs something done, we will no longer be considered as a backup option. You have the rest of today and all of tomorrow off. You deserve it. You are dismissed.
Though the call of dismissal was given, the hangar hovered with activity. Congratulations were given to all those who were promoted, and jovial celebration hung in the air. Lyland and Tacker made their silent departures, as the rest of the unit was permitted to revel in its success. For Scott, the success was beyond his own comprehension. With a Golden Lion, he was more than an ordinary soldier. He was, well, a Golden Lion. He engaged in celebration with the others for a short while, though as time filtered past, something familiar resurfaced in his head. The business of Eden was finished for that day, but he still had one thing left to do. He had promised her a call. It was a promise he intended to keep. He left the hangar with renewed optimism. She was going to be okay. They were going to be okay. David was right. Everything was going to be fine. For the first time that day, he actually believed it. Scott slipped into his room, locked the door, and patched through to a familiar voice. The conversation went wonderfully. Chapter 8, Thursday, April 7th, 0011 New Era, 0729 hours, the next morning. Though sleep was well-deserved, it was not uninterrupted. Scott was in the middle of an abstract dream when a knock at the door informed him that his rest that morning was not assured. In fact, he was assured quite the opposite. The media, upon learning of the daredevil carrier assault, was requesting an immediate press conference. Eden jumped at the chance for good publicity. That was where Scott came into play. Who better to address the media than the strike team's leader, the youngest soldier to ever earn a Golden Lion? And now, here he was, hastened awake, dressed in standard Eden attire, and waiting outside Richmond's media room.
You ready to go?
The words came from the officer who escorted him to the conference. It took several moments for the question to register, at which point Scott regarded the man with an absent stare.
They're about to introduce you.
It all happened so fast. He had just been asleep in his bunk, and now he was one set of double doors away from a room full of cameras and reporters. His only protection would be a wooden podium and a microphone. The officer nodded and slapped Scott on the shoulder.
Good luck out there. You'll do fine.
He had barely had time to slip in a call to Nicole and one to his brother before he left his room. Nicole was excited for him, more so than he was excited for himself. It was a stark contrast to the frightened girl he had spoken to the day before. As for Mark, he offered Scott the typical advice of a younger brother.
Tell them you got all your ideas straight from God, then flip out and start making all kinds of predictions.
Nicole's advice served him better.
Just be you, and they'll fall in love.
As he approached the double doors, he looked down at the golden lion that hung around his neck. That was why they were there, because he'd been given that medallion. The shock still hadn't worn off. The doors opened, and Scott heard his name as it was introduced to the media. An officer stood behind the wooden podium that would soon be Scott's and motioned for the young soldier to come forward. In the back of his mind, Scott felt the pressure build. This was international. This was the world. Only one thought came to mind. Humor. Break the nervousness with humor. If you don't start with some kind of laugh, you're going to fall to pieces for all the earth to see. As he took the podium, he shifted his attention to the reporters. He was met with a barrage of plastic smiles. Not a single one of them looked sincere, merely the artificial expressions required of their roles. Beneath the masks were sharks. A room full of sharks. And he was fresh chum. Humor. Break it with humor. Sweat covered his palms. The room fell silent.
If this was my day off, I'd hate to see overtime.
God, that was bad. He could see Nicole wincing from her couch. He could hear Mark laughing his head off. Nonetheless, a wave of sporadic chuckles flitted across the room. That was all he needed. He felt himself find center.
Good morning, everyone. For record purposes, my name is Scott James Remington, and I am a Gamma Private in Charlie Squad of Falcon Platoon. I was asked to answer a few questions, so we can go ahead and begin that whenever you'd like.
Every hand in the room shot toward the ceiling. Scott picked one in the front row. It belonged to a short, stocky man.
You, sir.
Thank you. Grant Boone of the Virginia Reporter. Could you give us a brief summary of the mission, and then how you came to take command of the unit as an Alpha Private?
Falcon Platoon was called into Chicago at approximately 1:40 a.m. on Wednesday, April 6th. Operatives from Charlie and Delta squads were selected to partake in a rescue operation for a suppressed unit, in which I was instructed to assume command if our team leader was taken down. Being that Falcon Platoon had been restocked with only Alpha Privates from the Academy, there were no veteran officers available to assume a backup leadership role. That, to the best of my knowledge, is why I, as an Alpha Private, was given secondary command. While en route to the suppression area, our team was ambushed by BACMA forces, and our team leader was incapacitated. As instructed, I assumed command. The threats were neutralized, and we located and secured the suppression zone. From that point, we learned that the original mission of the suppressed team was to capture one of the two BACMA carriers. We took it upon ourselves to finish that obligation, and myself, along with four others from both my unit and the suppressed unit, set out to do so. Without getting into too many specifics, we were able to infiltrate the transport by use of a van, at which point we fought our way into the engine room and disabled the drive. We locked ourselves in and waited for backup to arrive and get us out.
Can you tell us about the van?
The van was an ad lib. I realized that the five of us would never have gotten close enough to the transport to make a difference, so we needed a quicker way to get there. We took advantage of a van that we had used for cover earlier and drove it backward down the street, up the ramp of the transport, and right up into the central corridor, which opens directly into the transport's troop bay.
Scott observed the reporter for a moment, and then his gaze once again roamed the room.
Some other questions?
Hands shot up. Scott locked onto a slender woman in the back and offered her a nod.
Michelle Kindler, Direct 1. How does it feel to be the youngest soldier to earn a Golden Lion?
It was a question he knew was inevitable the moment he found out about the conference. He had rehearsed his answer several times in his head.
It's an honor. But I realize that without the efforts of the men and women I presided over at the time, the mission would have been a failure. This medal is a testament to their effort and ability.
Before the reporter could offer a follow-up, Scott moved his gaze to another eager-handed reporter.
Go ahead, sir.
Aaron Spooler, Suburban Times. In what way did you prepare for this mission?
Prepare? There was so little time to prepare. It was a mad rush from his room to the hangars and from the hangars to Chicago.
I'm sorry, do you mean Chicago as a whole or the rescue operation?
Either one.
With prayer. In this occupation, you don't have the luxury of an advanced warning. So for me, personally, I prayed before our transport even landed in Chicago. As a man of faith, I believe in the power of prayer. I'd like to think that the success of our mission had a lot to do with that.
It had everything to do with it. He was convinced of that. His attention shifted to another reporter in the middle of the room. The reporter stood as Scott acknowledged him.
Thank you. Jeremy White from the East Coast Chronicle. Following up on your answer concerning faith, at any time did you doubt that the assault on the transport would succeed?
No, not at all. There wasn't a doubt in my mind that we would take the transport. Personal faith aside, I don't think doubt is something you can allow into your mind in a combat situation. You have to be confident. That's not a choice. There's no room for second-guessing in battle. Once a decision is made, you have to stay committed to that decision. Once we were given the mission of assaulting the transport, at no time did I think we would fail.
After several seconds of quiet, the hands in the room once again reached skyward.
Go ahead.
Lee Charrier from the Richmond Journalist. Are you the next Klaus Färber?
Scott gaped. Klaus Färber? How could he even be compared with Klaus Färber? Färber was a living legend. Scott was, well, aside from a single good operation, nobody.
How can you possibly compare me to Captain Färber, who's been part of this organization since day one? Next question.
Before another question could be raised, the young reporter spoke again.
But is it safe to say you're off to a better start than he is?
No, he wasn't even going to entertain that line of questioning.
Next.
He nodded to another reporter.
Hello, Mr. Remington. Brandon Cooper from the Metropolitan. There were 55 civilian lives lost in Chicago. How would you assess the success of Eden relative to those lost lives?
Scott hesitated.
I realize that as good as our efforts may have been, nothing can replace the loss of civilian life or military life. It's unfortunate that lives were lost, and I wish we could fight under different circumstances.
Is there anything you'd like to say to those families?
Yes, I would. I'm deeply sorry for the loss of their loved ones. All of our thoughts and prayers are with them today.
That was all he could say. This was war, and lives were destined to be lost. All they could do was try their best to curb it. His gaze slid to a woman on the third row.
Go ahead, ma'am.
Elizabeth Franklin, Focus News. Have you ever met Captain Färber?
What was their problem?
No, I have not. Next question.
A well-dressed lady in the back of the room stood.
Good morning, Mr. Remington. Stephanie Fargo of ORS News. After such a successful inaugural mission and after becoming the Golden Lion, would you consider yourself to be one of the rising stars in Eden?
The Golden Lion? Others had earned that reward before him. Not many, granted, but still he wasn't alone. The award wasn't designed for him. He wondered if they even knew what a Golden Lion was.
I don't think I can speculate on that after one mission. I was fortunate to have a good crew of men and women behind me, so I attribute a lot of credit to them. How much of the mission's success was a direct reflection on me, I can't say. I don't know if anybody can say.
But at no point did you feel overwhelmed or flustered?
It's like I said before, there's no room for that in this line of work. All that matters is that the job gets done. You've got to be able to turn feelings off. But no, to answer your question.
Before Scott could offer correction on her, the Golden Lion, the officer who had initially escorted him into the media room stepped up to the podium. Scott backed away from the mic while the officer smiled and faced the reporters.
Thank you all for your questions. That's all for now. The Vice General will be here shortly to give you an update on mainland security.
Scott was promptly escorted out of the media room and into the green room where the double doors once again sealed him away from the spotlight. The chatter of reporters rose as each subsequent station awaited the Vice General. The officer grinned.
You did good, Färber.
Scott laughed. He might as well have been Captain Färber. That was apparently who the media wanted to talk to.
Thanks, sir. Those weren't exactly my favorite questions.
They'll pull those on you every now and then. You handled it well. Fine work in Chicago, by the way.
Thank you, sir.
You know how to get out of here, right?
Yes, sir. Same way I came in, I'm guessing.
That'll do it.
Scott slid his hands into his pockets and stood alone in the green room. The distanced chatter of the reporters still filtered through the double doors, waiting for their vice general. He slid his hand from its pocket and curled its fingers around the golden lion. The golden lion. The beast's gaze stared back at him. It was just a piece of fancy metal, that was all. It didn't have superpowers. It wasn't worth a fortune. It was just fancy metal. How could just fancy metal create such an ordeal? He honestly didn't know. He made his way to the exit. This morning had already been more than he'd bargained for, and a bed awaited him in 419. This was supposed to be his day off. The next few days returned Charlie Squad to the pace of routine. The day of rest was used appropriately for unit-wide rest. When the first day of regularly scheduled business came, they were right back to work with daily combat drills, workout sessions, and discussions of hypothetical mission scenarios. The media frenzy over Scott was short-lived. Soon enough, more substantial news of the world reclaimed the public spotlight. While the Battle of Chicago, as it came to be called, remained in prime coverage, the operatives of the five-man strike team fell back into quiet anonymity. Their initiation was over. They were tried soldiers of Eden.